南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。
Hello everyone, Sifu Sylvain with you here today. Proud to be with you here today. Namo Myo Renge Kyo. To further our and deepen our understanding of self-practice of the Lotus Sutra, invoking our perception, our mind through the lens of Buddha, for the maximal experience of our potential in this brief time we have of life. Life being the entire universe. Life not happening to us, but splayed out throughout time without beginning or end. For this special time period we have to experience it in all of its magnificence. Dignity is not about superiority. Respect is not about what is earned or given. These words describe properly our reverence for all of life. And I don't mean from insects to neighbors. I mean space itself, time itself, this entire mechanism of instantiation and manifesting every imaginable potential of energy forming into form. We are form. With our human mind, emergent mind, we are all about that form. We seek it. We want to own it, possess it. We fear losing it. That is samsara. But as Shakyamuni found, if we can train our minds to understand the unimaginable grandeur and size and function of this whole engine of life as an engine constantly in flux, constantly evolving, constantly manifesting potentials that stick around for a certain time, space, and decay into returning all of its component energies back into potential. If we can make our minds perceive that this is what is constantly occurring, then in fact there is no thing that can be possessed because it's constantly changing. What you think you have or you own or you manipulate or you're afraid of losing, it's already gone. Things are constantly in flux. Nothing is static. And so what Shakyamuni realized was that if you could turn that switch of possession off and just appreciate the flow of everything, all of the myriad stresses and anxieties and fears and desires would not be such an imposition on your samsaric life. They would be more akin to a pleasant experience of witnessing. Like when a child first sits in a pool of water and splashes the water up into the air and giggles. You can't own that, but you can experience it. And you can be thankful for having experienced it. Right? This is how life should be. And in that is equanimity. In that is the dignity of the process of life itself. It, by being experienced, by being witnessed, the process is dignified. Without us as witness, what is it? In our deep, abiding sense of knowing, sense of experiencing, our wealth of gratitude for being the witness. That is the respect. If you take the words of Buddhism and anytime you catch yourself using those words to define or parameterize or characterize your relationships with things, others, people, possessions, then you don't yet understand Buddhism. And so those are my personal words to begin another video on another portion of selecting the right time. And in this portion, it's titled Refutation of the Shingon School, Nichiren is again going to remind us, more specifically the people of his day and their attachments to false ideas about Buddhism. But I want you to keep your eyes open for rhetoric in here, which applies directly to our experience of the world today, in our context. We don't have a shogunate, but we do have a lot of authoritarianship and a lot of people who wish to be dictators, like King Jong-un in North Korea, and those people who idolize him from outside of Korea and think, that guy's got it made. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. So we'll see, where is the dignity? Where is the respect? Where is the sublime order of life? The equanimity of it being appreciated and validated. Let's just keep our attention to how this all applies to continuous behavior of humanity. So Nichiren goes on. The Shingon School is a false teaching bringing calamities incomparably greater than those of the two schools mentioned above when he was talking about the Zen and the Pure Land. Briefly speaking, it originates from the Tripitaka masters Subhakara Sima, Vajra Bodhi and Amoghasvajra, I always stumble on that one, or as he's known in his Chinese name, Pu Kung, who brought the Great Sun Buddha Sutra, the Diamond Peak Sutra, and the Sutra on the Act of Perfection from India to China during the reign of Emperor Shantung of the Great Tang Dynasty. Now, you may have read other books. I think I've made suggestions of books on the travel of the sutras from through the Himalayas and southern routes, but mainly through the Himalayas in this particular book called the something on sutras. I'll get you that. Anyway, there was an interchange of people studying Buddhism from India to China, and then through the southern route, of course, Sri Lanka and so forth. But these are journeys that weren't made in a Humvee or aircraft, or right? These were journeys that were made on foot over hundreds and hundreds of miles through treacherous territory. So put in context in your mind that these journeys happened over centuries, millennia, really. And that although some teachings made it into China from Indian scholars coming to China, then over the centuries, different scholars, researchers would, with their interest in the widespread teachings of Buddhism in China, would then go, travel from China to India to search for themselves, to look for maybe other sutras that hadn't been introduced to China yet, even though 1,000 years had passed since Shakyamuni had died. They were wanting to expand their knowledge on Buddhism. And when they would find these sutras in their travels, they would, as we've already talked about politics and ego and so forth, they would come back with these other teachings and not regard them within the historical context of the order of the teachings and demonstrate that they had these new teachings now from India. Well, they weren't new. They were newly exposed to China and certainly through those scholars. And then they would want to make their mark with it. They went through a lot of effort to get these and study, sometimes for decades at a time. And then they would come back and they would want to be recognized for their feat, their effort, and their accomplishment. And that oftentimes would trump the previously established teachings and their relative superiority or place amongst the canon. And this is exactly what's happening here. So let's read on and see if we can't pick that up just from translation here. What these sutras preach is clear. The ultimate doctrine preached in them is the one vehicle teaching leading to bodhisattvahood, sublimating or negating the two kinds of teachings applicable to men of the two vehicles, Sravaka and Pratyekabuddha. To differentiate them from other sutras, they preach only finger signs and mantras, right? Hand positions and repetitive statements to condition your mind. Their doctrines are not comparable to the one vehicle teaching leading to Buddhahood, the Lotus Sutra, sublimating the three kinds of teachings applicable to men of the two vehicles and bodhisattvas preached in the Flower Garland Sutra and the Wisdom Sutras, right? These are steps along the way. They're valuable for the steps that they and the people that they educated in their time. But today, they're no longer useful. They are assumed knowledge, right? So by this time, okay, I'll just let Nichiren speak of it. Still less do they equal what the Tendai doctrine refers to as distinct and perfect teachings among the sutras preached before the Lotus. They are merely Hinayana and introductory Mahayana teachings. Nevertheless, Tripitaka Master Sabhakarashima seems to have opinionated, quote, These sutras would be derided by the flower garland Qigong and the Faxiang Hoso schools and made a laughingstock by the Tendai school if they are known as they are. See, here's that rub. He understands, Pukung and these others, that these are inferior teachings. They're inferior not because they're bad teachings, but they're no longer valid. They were valid for the steps of learning that the people were able to understand in Shakyamuni's day, but they would not supersede the lotus. They wouldn't even supersede Tendai's teachings, because Tendai recognized the proper order of teachings, and these teachings could not compete with that. Although it's wonderful to have them as reference, as a knowledge base, as far as a current practice, and this is before the latter age of degeneration, right? So he decides, well, since these schools, as he says, would be derided as a laughingstock by Tendai school, if they're known as they are, it's a pity, however, not to propagate them in China after having brought them from India as important documents. Right? We need credit. We need credit for all this hard work that we did. Yeah, what we found was formative, but doesn't equal what we already have, but, you know, we can't just go unappreciated. So, then there was a fool called Zen Master Yi Xing among the Tendai monks in China. So, Nichiren's calling him a fool, and we'll find out why in a minute here, but evidently, even though you might be a monk at a Tendai monastery in China, one of Tendai's monks, one of Qi Yi's very own, still harboring thoughts of other schools, not really committed, is he? Shabakarashima talked him into discussing the doctrines of Chinese Buddhism prevalent at the time. Completely fooled, Yi Xing described not only the gist of the Sun Lun, Fa Xiang, and Flower Garland doctrines, but also the Tendai doctrines as well. So he gave Pukung some ammunition. Upon listening to him, Subakarashima determined that the Tendai school was so greater than what he had heard in India, that he would not be able to add anything to it. Damn, I'm not going to get any attention for my discoveries. Therefore, he fooled Yi Xing by saying that Yi Xing was a wise man of China and the Tendai school was great, and that what the Shingon, Chen Yin school could offer and Tendai could not were only finger signs and mantras. So your school that you're going to, Yi Xing, it's great. It's wonderful. It's supreme. And, you know, the only thing we have to offer with the teachings that we brought from India is these hand signs and mantras. As Yi Xing agreed with him, yeah, you're right, Subakarashima further said to him, quote, just as Grandmaster Tendai wrote commentaries on the Lotus Sutra, I want commentaries to the Great Sun Buddha Sutras to be written as a means of spreading Shingon Buddhism. Would you care to write them? So he's already copped to the fact that the teachings he's brought back from India are inferior to the teachings they now have in China. The scholarship is evident. And we don't have much to add to the current scholarship other than, you know, hand gestures and mantras. But you're such a smart guy, Yi Xing. You're such a great student. Look at everything you've taught me about the Tendai school. It's mind-blowing. I would really like for people to at least know about these Shingon, what I'm calling Shingon Buddhism, these tracts that I've brought back from India. Could you help me write something down about them that would give them their proper place? Oh, yeah, wow. I could be one of those writers instead of just a student. I could be writing proper commentaries. Wow, this would solidify my future, my renown, my ego. Yeah, okay. Right? So Yixing answers him, I would be glad to do so, but I wonder in what way I should write them. Oh my goodness. He's either too cowardly to admit that anything he wrote would diminish what they are, because he knows that they're not important, not to the day, not to the time. And so then he follows that up by saying, announcing his discontent and maybe fawning this guy who's talking to him like his ego is so puffed up now, right? And he wants this guy to know, you're giving me a great opportunity. So he says, the Tendai school is an irritating school. It's smug. They're so right. It has an advantage that no other school can defeat it in debate. No matter how hard it tries, they're always right. In the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, an introductory teaching to the Lotus Sutra, it is definitely stated that the truth was not revealed in any sutras preached during the 40 years or so before the Lotus Sutra. Please help me figure out how I'm supposed to make this document valid when I have these strong admonitions against it. Further, it is stated in the Teacher of the Dharma, 10th and Divine Powers of the Lotus or the Buddha, 21st chapter of the Lotus Sutra, that the sutras preached after the Lotus will not show the true way leading to Buddhahood. The Lotus Sutra also makes it clear that none of those sutras preached at the same time as the Lotus equals it when it declares that it is a sutra supreme to those being preached in the 10th chapter. Now, in which group should we include the Great Sun Buddha Sutra among those sutras preached in the past, those being presently preached, or those being preached in the future? Help me write this document. I feel nervous about saying stuff that I'll be admonished for. Right? This guy. No wonder Nichiren calls him a fool. With a crafty design, Venerable Shabakurashima then told Yixing, here's how you're going to do it. The Great Sun Buddha Sutra has a chapter entitled Stages of Mind. Just as the Sutra of Infinite Meaning repelled all the sutras preached during the 40 years or so preceding the Lotus Sutra, it can also do the same. Oh, I see. So what we'll do is change its footing by making same claims as the Infinite Meaning leading to the Lotus Sutra, so we can be on the we can claim the same footing. That's clever. The chapters of the Great Sun Buddha following the introducing the mandala chapter are separated into two sutras of the Lotus and Great Sun Buddha in China, but they were originally one sutra in India. Oh my goodness. Child's play, right? We'll just claim that this sutra is really just the Lotus Sutra by another name. It's just that just now in China we're finding that out because of my great scholarship of finding this sutra these sutras in India. Never before known in China. Oh, yeah, they're just two different chapters of the same teaching as the Lotus. What? What? Shakyamuni Buddha preached only pure doctrine of the Great Sun Buddha Sutra, exclusive of his teachings on finger and signs and mantras, to Shāyīputra and Bodhisattva Maitreya, calling it the Lotus Sutra. Tripitaka master Kumarajiva transmitted it to China which Grandmaster Tendai read. The Great Sun Buddha called the Lotus Sutra, and the Great Sun Buddha Sutra when it was preached to Vajrasattva. It is called the Great Sun Buddha Sutra, which I personally saw in India. So basically, he's clouding the issue and saying, Shakyamuni taught these were two different sermons, depending on who he was talking to, about the exact same thing. That'll put us on equal footing. Therefore, what you should stress when you write is that the Great Sun Buddha Sutra and the Lotus Sutra are of one taste, like a mixture of water and milk. Then we can claim, once you establish that fact, that the Great Sun Buddha Sutra is superior to all the sutras preached, those being preached, and those to be preached, just as the Lotus Sutra claimed. So now we're on equal footing, and now we're setting up a kind of a competition. The Sun Buddha and the Lotus Sutra, both discussions about the same thing, but the Lotus Sutra was for certain individuals, whereas the Sun Buddha, I'm sure he's about to say, has a much larger qualification to it, and therefore must be superior. Pretty clever. In addition, if we decorate the 3,000 existences contained in the One Thought Doctrine, which is a pure doctrine, not going to get rid of it, with finger signs and mantras, it will be a secret dharma equipped with the three physical, verbal, and mental mystic practices. We can start to mystify this Buddhahood that you can instantiate. Now we're going to show you how you do it with all this magic. Considering these three mystic practices, the Tendai school has mental mystic practice alone, just meditation, lacking the finger signs and mantras. The Shingon school is like a brave general wearing an armor and helmet and armed with a bow and arrow. Equipped with only the mental mystic practices, the Tendai school is like a brave general who is naked. Whoa. So now he's craftily moved away from the issue of the Lotus Sutra being supreme amongst all teachings to simply eviscerating the Tendai school of the Lotus and superseding it with what he's now claiming is actually the superior sutra. The Lotus being just a portion of. So now Nichiren says, so Master He Ching wrote his commentary to the Great Sun Buddha Sutra as instructed above. It seems there was no one in the 330 states of China who knew this, or they didn't want to. Although there were some who enthusiastically discussed the comparative superiority of the Lotus Sutra and the Great Sun Buddha Sutra at the beginning, they were converted to Shingon Buddhism day by day until such discussion ceased to exist. Nobody questioned it anymore. Subakarashima was highly esteemed while the followers of the Tendai school were not, and there was not a man of Tendai's wisdom after his passing. As the years passed, the deception of the Shingon school became deeply rooted until it was completely hidden. Ugh. The ego of man, right? So years go by, and now we enter a new phase where Nichiren is going to speak of Grandmaster Dengyo's views on the Shingon Buddhism. When Grandmaster Dengyo of Japan went to Tang, China, to introduce the Tendai Buddhism to Japan, he transmitted Chen Yin or Shingon Buddhism as well. He transmitted the Tendai Buddhism to the Emperor of Japan and had the high priests of the six schools of Nara study Shingon Buddhism. practices. He found it just as a form of Buddhism in China. He was studying, right? As the comparative superiority of the six schools of Nara and Tendai had been decided upon prior to his going to China, the Japanese already knew about Tendai and his established school, he should have settled the issue on the comparative superiority of Tendai and Shingon after his return. Certainly by the time he got back, he would have had enough scholarship to know that one was a usurper and a poser and egotistical and wrong, and the other, Tendai, which he had been practicing before he went to China, was far superior. Why didn't he say anything? However, as arguments for and against the establishment of the, quote, perfect and sudden, end quote, Mahayana precept dais seemed to last forever, he did not say anything about Shingon Buddhism before the emperor. So he was in the throes, Dengyo was, of establishing this Mahayana ordination platform, this dais, this landmark of Buddhist practice. Like your PhD if you're going through school. Once you reach a certain level of scholarship, understanding of the self-practice teachings of the Lotus Sutra, you would earn a position on this higher plane of Buddhist understanding, the Mahayana dais, of vows, understanding, study, practice, right? And that would give you authority to judge, I don't like that word, but basically analyze other people's knowledge and scholarship so that they could achieve this level of Buddhist practice, right? But because he was having trouble with the other sects, still, I don't like that. I don't want to admit that. Our sect is still valid. And they have the emperor's ear, and the emperor wants to see, well, who's the most valuable to my esteem and power over the populace of Japan, right? It's a big ego thing for him as well, the emperor. So unless Dengyo could really secure the obvious, in the emperor's mind, he was a little reticent. He wanted to solve the, let's get the dais done. Let's establish that, and then I'll debate the value, right? Nor did he make any clear-cut statements to his disciples about it. Mistake? Word spreads fast without we have social media now, but before all of that communication, it was all murmurs and whispers, right? So he couldn't afford to be undermined by his own people just because they knew different. Perhaps because he felt it was unwise to make many enemies who might block the establishment of the precept dais. Or perhaps because he intended to leave the chastising of Shingon Buddhism for the practitioners of the Lotus Sutra in the latter age of degeneration, because they weren't there yet, and they all knew about it. However, he wrote a secret essay entitled The Effects of Tendai on Buddhist Schools, in a facile describing how the seven schools of Buddhism, six schools of Nara and Shingon school, surrendered to the Tendai school. In the preface, he wrote a few words about the deception of the Shingon school. So he was preparing the ground, but he was not ignorant of the political forces around him either. So for whatever reason, he chose to capture his thoughts in a private document and would get back to this when it seemed a more favorable political climate, right? Or that political climate might not appear until long after his passing. Now we have a new chapter refuting Grandmaster Kobo's false teachings. So we understand the situation with Dengyo, and we also know, being as we know history, that after Dengyo's passing, his students finally got the Mahayana dais, the perfect and sudden enlightenment dais of Mahayana Buddhism, established, and retroactively credited Saicho with that, naming him Dengyo, right? So Dengyo never did personally take this to the emperor, as this is a deception and should no longer be practiced. And we can that's history. So we can analyze it to death, but that's what happened. So Kobo the follow-up to Dengyo, who should have been Dengyo's biggest proponent, right? Grandmaster Kobo went to China during the same Enraku era as Grandmaster Dengyo did. And he studied Shingon Buddhism under Huikuo of the Qinglong Su Temple. In his writings, after returning from China, judging the comparative superiority among all the sutra Shakyamuni Buddha had preached during his lifetime, Grandmaster Kobo insisted Shingon Sutras are the first, the flower garland the second, and the lotus the third. He didn't even make the lotus second, he made it the third. Although this grandmaster has been extremely highly esteemed, I dare say that his understanding of Buddhism is surprisingly shallow. So he was totally motivated by politics and ego, obviously. And he saw the perfect opportunity with this handmade revolution or obfuscation of the truth, the Shingon, as his vehicle to ride. Dengyo's gone. Let me take over and get all the riches and land and power. Thinking about this matter briefly, I suppose Grandmaster Kobo went to China to transmit only the ritualism of Shingon's Buddhism, namely the finger signs and mantras, without deeply contemplating the doctrine. Upon returning to Japan, he observed the world carefully and saw that the Tendai school had grown so strong that it might be difficult to spread Shingon Buddhism in Japan. If only. Therefore, by adopting the Flower Garland Sutra, or doctrine, which he had studied before going to China, he insisted that the Shingon Buddhism was superior to the Lotus Sutra. It's kind of tailor-made to make that argument, isn't it? However, perhaps because he thought that the people would not believe in him if he said it just as the Flower Garland School maintained, he added a little color to it by saying it was the true teaching of the Great Sun Buddha Sutra. Bodhisattva Nagarjuna's treatise on the aspiration for Buddhahood and Subhakarashima, it was an extraordinary lie. But the followers of the Tendai school did not strongly protest it, whether they thought, this bozo, it'll just go away, or they weren't strong enough to be able to make debateful, worthy arguments. Don't know, maybe both. Question: Grandmaster Kobo says in his treatise on the 10 stages of mind, there it is, that chapter again, right? Jewel key to the store of mysteries and comparison of exoteric and esoteric Buddhism, that all exoteric teachings claim to be the path leading to Buddhahood, but that they are merely useless arguments compared to Shingon esotericism preached later. That compared to the Great Sun Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha is still in the realm of spiritual darkness. This is the founder of Buddhism. How do you get away with such a lie? Oh, he was really in the dark. Yeah, this whole thing we're doing, the founder didn't really know what he was talking about. How do you get away with saying something like that? Saying he was unenlightened Dude, the whole idea of enlightenment comes from this man coursing the world as an enlightened being. Tathagata, thus come one, Bhagavan, Buddha. Where do you come along and say, well, yeah, but he was an amateur, didn't really know what he was talking about. He wasn't even enlightened. This sounds like a Jerry Springer script. I am not the father of the child. And he goes on that the Lotus Sutra is of the fourth butter taste according to the five flavors. It's not like clarified butter, ghee, right? We see that example a lot in Buddhism. Classification, and that Chinese scholars of Buddhism competed with one another in stealing the ultimate taste of clarified butter, daigo or ghee, from Shingon Buddhism in order to bolster their own. They stole from Shingon to make the Lotus Sutra more important. Yeah, as long as you're lying, might as well flip reality on its head, right? What do you think of these comments of Kobo? This is the question Nichiren is posing, right? And so Nichiren answers it, of course. Surprised at these comments, I looked through all the Buddhist scriptures as well as the Triple Sutras of the Great Sun Buddha. Nowhere is it said, not even one word or phrase, that the Lotus Sutra is merely a useless argument in contrast to the Flower Garland Sutra and the Great Sun Buddha Sutra, a robber compared to the Sutra of the Six Paramita, and in the realm of spiritual darkness compared to the Guardian Sutra. This does not have any factual basis whatsoever. They're bold-faced lies. Nevertheless, since these comments have been accepted by many wise men of Japan for the past 300 or 400 years, people came to think that they were reasons for them. This is the power of the pulpit, right? If there's no one to knock you down, you can get away with anything. People just want to follow. They want to be told what to do. And more than that, they don't want to be beheaded for not doing what they're told. So, okay, we'll do that now. For now, I will point out their very simple lies to make it clear that others are not worthy of discussing. In other words, there's so many lies built on so many lies, built on so much avarice and greed and stupidity. I'm just going to point out some of the main lies, and I'm not going to bother discussing the whole plethora that follow behind them, right? So here he goes. It was during the time of Chen Sui dynasties in China that the Lotus Sutra was likened to the taste of clarified butter. There you go. While the Sutra of the Six Paramita was introduced to China by Tripitaka Master Prajna Hanya Sanjo in the middle of the Tang Dynasty. If the Daigo taste of the Sutra had been transmitted to Chen Sui, China, it might have been possible that Grandmaster Tendai plagiarized the Daigo taste of the Shingon Buddhism. How could he steal it when it was introduced to China after his death? Wow. Logic, reason, right? Buddhism is about the mind, attitude, intent. Logic, reason. So how could Tendai, the founder of Tendai, have stolen Shingon concepts if Shingon concepts hadn't even been introduced to China at all until long after his demise, his death? How's that work? We doing time travel now? There is a similar example readily available. Monk Tokuitsu of Japan once accused Grandmaster Tendai of destroying the three-period teaching expounded in the Revealing the Profound and Secret Sutra, saying it was like a three-inch tongue murdering a five-foot body. Then Grandmaster Dengyo pointed out his mistake, saying, quote, "The Revealing the Profound and Secret Sutra was introduced to China by Xuanzang at the beginning of the Tang Dynasty. Grandmaster Tendai is a man of the preceding Chensui period. It was several years after the death of Grandmaster Tendai that the sutra was introduced to China. Same thing. How could anyone destroy a sutra transmitted after his death? Monk Tokuitsu not only was at a loss for an answer, duh, check your facts, but he died with his tongue split in 8 pieces. Whatever, hyperbole. Basically, that would be the reputation of his broken words, right? That's what that would, I would take that to mean. He died with his tongue split in 8 pieces means that everything he taught, whoever might count themselves as followers of him, would have been disgusted and walked away from him by the time he passed away. Right? Because the tongue in all these writings is about the verbal, the sermon, the teaching of that person and the relative worth of that teaching. So obviously, he had no worth in his teaching. Now, Kobo's slandering of the Grandmaster Tendai is incomparably worse than Tokuitsu's. He called the Fa Sang of the Huan Yen school, Chia Xiang of the San Lun school, Xua Chuang of the Fa Sang school, Grandmaster Tendai, masters of northern and southern China, and scholars and commentators since the latter Han period, all thieves. This is the worst slander ever has ever been uttered. Moreover, describing the Lotus Sutra to be the taste of Daigo is not an arbitrary statement of Grandmaster Tendai. In the Nirvana Sutra, the Buddha called the Lotus Sutra the taste of Daigo. Bodhisattva Vasubandhu has written that the Lotus Sutra and the Nirvana Sutra are of Daigo in his commentary on the Lotus Sutra. And the Bodhisattva Nagarjuna named the Lotus Sutra a golden remedy in the Great Wisdom Discourse. Therefore, if those who called the Lotus Sutra the taste of Daigo are thieves, are not Shakyamuni Buddha, the Buddha of many treasures, all the Buddhas in all the worlds in the universe, Nagarjuna and Vasubandhu also thieves? Disciples of Kobo and Shingon monks of the Tojo Temple in Japan, even if you cannot see whether your own eyes are black or white, you must see your own errors of slandering the true Dharma when using the words of the Buddha, commentators, and masters as a mirror. Again, go back to the original texts that are being decimated here, read them, and ask yourself, are you not smart enough to see through this incredible lie? He goes on, besides, if there is a clear statement in the Great Sun Buddha Sutra or the Diamond Peak Sutra to the effect that the Lotus Sutra is a useless argument as Kobo wrote it to be, you had better show it to me. Even if there could be such statements in those sutras, you had better think hard because they could be mistranslations. Here's our translation stuff again. It is said that Confucius thought about something 9 times before uttering a word. The Duke of Chao is said to have interrupted washing his head and having a meal as often as 3 times in order to meet his guests and listen to them, just because he wanted to be clear and open. Even those among those who would study shallow temporal matters in non-Buddhist scriptures, wise men are as careful as this. How could Kobo make such a shameful statement that the Lotus Sutra was a useless argument? Where are we time-wise? Yeah. I'll just finish. This is 2 little paragraphs here, and we'll call it for this video. Shogakubo Kakuban, a distant student of Kobo, who had such a wrong view, calling himself the founder of the Denboin Temple, states in his liturgy for the ceremony dedicated to the Buddha's relics, quote, "Supreme is the Great Sun Buddha, the Lord of esoteric Buddhism, the threefold body of Shakyamuni Buddha, who is like a donkey or an ox compared to the Great Sun Buddha, cannot even pull a wagon for the Great Sun Buddha. Most secret and profound is the teaching of the two mandalas, in front of which the four teachings of exoteric Buddhism cannot even be its sandal carriers, end quote. This is what happens when you learn from bad teachers. You start saying stuff that's coming from your own imagination, paying homage to somebody who's totally messed you up. What is referred to as the four teachings of exoteric Buddhism here are the four schools of Hoso, Sanran, Kigan, and Lotus. The threefold body of donkey and ox refer to the four Buddhas as the lords of the lotus, flower garland, great wisdom, and revealing the profound and secret sutras. Thus, it is stated that compared to the Shingon monks, monks of those four schools and their Buddhas are inferior even to cattlemen and sandal carriers of the Shokakubo and Kobo. Things got really out of hand, right? And this is all based on ego and political influence and no longer based on Buddhism at all. Next video, we'll get into the next chapter, refuting the fallacies of the three schools. So he's not done yet. But I think for you and I, for our practice, I think it's useful to study this messy history, because that's how history is. It's rife with the egos of man. And where does this ego come from? This avarice, this greed, this manipulation, greed, anger, stupidity, foolishness. Here it is laid out. It's always about possession, gaining more, whether it's dollars or influence or land or sex or whatever it's about. Man always believes he will expand his presence by the ownership of more stuff. What could be more, first of all, validating for Buddha and Buddhism, and secondly, more antithetical to understanding what Buddhism is, or Buddha in general. So bodhisattvas have to come along throughout history, like Nietzsche, like Tendai, like Dengyo, and say, hold on, you guys are so full of crap. Go read the freaking document. You should be embarrassed. But how many people were reading the Lotus Sutra at the time? They couldn't go on Amazon and order a copy in any translation, right? So here we are in this age. And we have the opportunity of reading many transcriptions, translations of the Lotus Sutra. We have the opportunity of reading all of these letters and documents of great teachers like Nichiren and Tendai and others, Nagarjuna, all the way back to Shakyamuni's own sermons. And the truth, reasonable truth, the observable truth, it just hits you. Oh, yeah, I'm getting it. Yeah, more. Lotus Sutra. Now do it. What? Yeah, you do it. Buddha is yours to experience. Do it. How do I? Nichiren talks about it all the time. The law that is the Buddha in mind is Myoho Renge Kyo. You do it. You practice it. You invoke it. Namu. I'm here in this life in samsara. Mu. I want to inculcate. I want to invoke. I want to establish Buddha in my samsaric mind. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. What could be more simple? What's the only thing keeping us from doing that? Ego. I don't need to do that. I don't need to invoke, right? We start to diminish it in any way we can. Those are the arguments we hear from people. Well, just do it. It'll validate itself. Believe me, your Buddha perception is already, it's there. You're just not fully committed to it. So that's why we study. And we can see that the same problem has always existed. That's the benefit of studying this stuff. We can see Nichiren walking us through it, going, look, these are the real obstacles in life. The stuff that confuses you, that keeps you from doing the simple thing of awakening your Buddha mind. Namu myoho renge kyo. Just do that. I hope that's obvious. If there's something else that I haven't mentioned that you're struggling with, that you would like to have answered, maybe you're not seeing it in these videos, and that's okay. You know, we're swayed by so much rhetoric all day long with so many devices, so many messages, so many distractions. This is why I always say, be kind to yourself. You'll get there. You'll get there, but only if you put your feet in the water will you cleanse your mind. Right? You got to start doing it. You got to try it. Commit to it. Don't just be part of a party to belong. Really do it. Challenge it. All right, Buddha. Let me experience it. Let me experience this clarity in my mind. Buddha, come on. Namo myoho renge kyo. Yeah, with that kind of conviction. Not with anger, but with clear, wanton, requisite, demanding of your own mind to do this. Turn the switch on in my attic. Show me. With my experience, how different life could be. Namo myoho renge kyo. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading the podcast, for watching, for your support. Like, subscribe. Please subscribe. For my patrons, those of you who can support with some financial aid to keep this channel alive, we all thank you very much. And with that, I will see you in the next one. Okay? Bye for now.